From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Wednesday, April 8th. I'm Abby Larico. Voters weighed in on funding and leadership for schools, emergency responders, and other community questions last night, and there were some surprises. We'll bring you the results of last night's municipal elections in Missouri and what they mean for communities today. Plus, Illinois officials have a couple of ideas to reduce gas prices, like keeping the so-called winter blend of gasoline all year.
Gas Buddy would tell you it's about a 15 cents a gallon difference.
That and other ideas for lowering the price at the pump coming up on The Gateway. It was a mixed night for St. Louis area fire and EMS districts looking for funding help from sales taxes. 18 emergency services districts across St. Louis, St. Charles, and Jefferson counties will get funding help from sales taxes beginning in October, but 20 others said no. STLPR's Rachel Littman explains.
The 38 sales tax increases were on the ballot due to two changes in state law approved last year. They passed in a majority of fire and EMS districts in St. Louis County, but mostly failed in St. Charles and Jefferson counties. Proponents argued they would shift some of the cost of providing services to people who passed through the districts but still need the help of firefighters or paramedics, but sales taxes are regressive, falling the hardest on lower-income individuals. State law requires the districts where the sales taxes were approved to phase in property tax relief equal to 50% of the new revenue generated, in districts with a large retail base that could eventually push the property tax rate to zero. I'm Rachel Lippman, St. Louis Public Radio.
St. Louis City residents have again retained a 1% tax that makes up a third of the city's general revenue. Proposition E passed Tuesday 85-15% in final unofficial results. This is the fourth time voters have kept the tax in place and the largest margin of victory since 2011. The tax is paid by people who live or work in the city. The vote is required by state law. The earnings tax will next be on the ballot in 2031. St. Charles County voters defeated a ballot measure that would have frozen property taxes. STLPR's Jason Rosenbaum reports that Proposition RT garnered substantial opposition.
The proposition would have frozen property tax rates for all homeowners, regardless of age, to the 2024 rate. It failed by a 59-41% margin. John Greifzu is the CEO of the St. Charles City County Library. He says the measure would have been financially devastating for an array of county services, including his library system.
Although we don't like paying the tax, the community overall recognizes the importance of the services being delivered by the tax.
A similar property tax freeze in Jefferson County passed by a roughly 61-39% margin. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Voters in St. Charles County rejected conservative candidates in this year's election for the Francis Howell Board of Education. As St. Louis Public Radio's Hiba Ahmed reports, the change in leadership follows a national trend.
Newly elected board members Sarah Dillard, Jason Adams, and Kevin McGuire were all endorsed by a progressive political action committee. This election marks the third year in a row where conservative candidates have failed to secure seats on the board. Here's Jason Adams.
I'm just so excited that our community has decided to finally put the hate and the divisiveness that has existed on our board to rest so we can concentrate on the serious matters instead of the manufactured noise that's taken place over the last few years.
In a statement, a spokesperson for the conservative PAC, known as Francis Howell Families, said they will continue to hold this new board accountable and keep advocating for students and families. The candidates will be sworn into the board on April 14th. I'm Hiba Ahmed, St. Louis Public Radio.
Voters in the school district of Clayton overwhelmingly approved a bond referendum allowing for facility improvements. The $135 million project includes a full renovation and expansion of Glen Ridge Elementary School, a new STEM and business-focused learning lab at Clayton High School, and upgrades to Gayfield Athletic Complex. This is the first round of upgrades in the district's multi-year facilities master plan. It passed with 89.2% of the vote. Four out of every seven voters, or 57%, were needed to approve the proposition. The prop will not increase tax rates for residents. This is the district's first bond referendum in 16 years. Voters in the Ferguson-Florissant School District approved a tax levy that will pay for security upgrades and expanded staffing. STLPR's Katie Gravich has details.
The 48-cent tax levy approved Tuesday will support technology upgrades, competitive wages, and other essential staffing needs. The funds will also be used to hire additional staff to manage documentation requests related to the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. The federal law compensates people or families who developed certain diseases if they were exposed to radiation from the U.S. nuclear weapons program. The school district is in an area of St. Louis County where residents face higher cancer rates and other harmful effects from nearby nuclear waste. The proposition needed a simple majority to pass and received 59.2% of the vote. I'm Katie Gravich, St. Louis Public Radio.
People in Delwood will see several new projects along West Florissant Avenue after voting in favor of a development proposal. STLPR's Chad Davis reports residents voted overwhelmingly to approve the transformation of several buildings, outdoor fields, and a recreation center.
The measure passed with 90% of the vote. It only needed 57% to succeed. Proposition D will use up to $6 million in general obligation bonds towards several West Florissant Avenue projects. That includes a new public safety building and outdoor plaza, as well as a farmer's market and food truck area outside the city skate rink. The money will also go toward an event center and a field for lacrosse, soccer, and football. I'm Chad Davis, St. Louis Public Radio.
Ellisville residents have voted not to allow the city to purchase the Ellisville Athletic Association baseball fields. Proposition 1 would have used up to $3.6 million in general obligation bonds to purchase the fields from the Athletic Association. The money would have gone toward upgrading the fields and replacing the grass with artificial turf. It also would have resulted in a temporary property tax increase. 53% voted in favor, but the measure needed 57% to pass. You can find more coverage of Tuesday's municipal elections across Missouri at stlpr.org. Interim St. Louis Sheriff John Hayden Jr. made a trip to Jefferson City Tuesday. As STLPR's Lily Halloran reports, he testified in favor of legislation that's already passed the Senate to continue to elect and not appoint the state's sheriffs.
If the Missouri House sends the bill to the governor's desk, voters would ultimately get to decide if electing county sheriffs should be enshrined in the Constitution. Hayden says he believes voters do not want sheriffs to be appointed.
The feedback from the community is that they want to elect a sheriff, and so we want to respect that. I think it's very important that there's a lot of accountability between law enforcement and the community, and I think what this bill does is memorialize that.
The legislation comes as there is debate over who gets to pick St. Louis's next sheriff, the mayor, alderman, or governor. Hayden says he plans to run for the position. He was appointed to be interim sheriff last fall after Alfred Montgomery was ousted over allegations of misconduct. In Jefferson City, I'm Lily Halloran, St. Louis Public Radio.
Pregnant women in Missouri will soon no longer face legal obstacles while getting a divorce. Governor Kehoe has signed into law legislation that removes possible legal barriers for pregnant women seeking a divorce. Representative Cecily Williams is one of the sponsors of the legislation. Williams, who is a domestic abuse survivor herself, called yesterday her personal Independence Day.
I've looked forward to it since the day I decided to run for office, knowing that this was my first priority, was changing this and making sure that I helped be a voice for those who also were silenced by domestic violence.
Throughout its journey in the legislature this year, the bill did not receive a single vote against it from lawmakers. Also Tuesday, Governor Kehoe signed into law a wide-reaching criminal justice bill. The legislation includes changes to the juvenile justice system. As St. Louis Public Radio Sarah Kellogg reports, the bill was a priority for the governor.
The legislation requires inmates to serve longer periods of their sentences. It would also make it easier to try juveniles as adults for some crimes. Democrats have criticized the bill for several reasons, including cost. The bill is projected at nearly $870 million by fiscal year 2029. Speaking after the bill was signed, Kehoe spoke on the projected cost, which could include the construction of a new prison.
Prisons are expensive, but committing crimes can't be tolerated. And I don't think most Missourians, I think, would agree that you don't want to be soft on crime because you ran out of room.
The bill also contains a provision allowing minors who commit the most serious felonies or who have committed 3 felonies within 6 months to be tried in adult court. In Jefferson City, I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
Utility companies could soon include the cost of building nuclear power plants in Missourians' rates. The House approved legislation yesterday that would overturn the state's current ban on charging Missourians for the construction of nuclear facilities. Voters approved that ban in the 1970s. Proponents say Missouri will need small nuclear reactors to power data centers. They say transporting power from other states is more expensive. But representatives against the legislation say it places risk on Missourians, and canceled plants in other states have cost billions. Democrats and Republicans also disagree about the safety of nuclear power. No small reactors, like the ones the bill would allow, currently exist in the United States. The legislation now goes to the Senate, where it has stalled for several years. Dozens of people have to leave an apartment complex in St. Louis's Marine Villa neighborhood after police raided the property for guns and drugs late last week. St. Louis Public Radio's Lucretia Wembley reports.
The Concord Apartments had been condemned since February, but residents continue to live there. The landlord has been missing for at least a year, and police say violent crime has increased in recent months. But Clanisha Montgomery has lived at the apartments for over 6 years. She says she stopped paying rent a year ago after the landlord disappeared.
Nothing was wrong with my house. It was up to par. No holes, no nothing. What about my deposit? Am I just to move, still be billed? Like, what was I supposed to do?
Advocates say the city and police failed to properly handle residents, leaving more than 60 with nowhere to go. They each received a citation for occupying a condemned building and will soon be expected in court. I'm Lucretia Wembley, St. Louis Public Radio.
One of the largest public art festivals in the U.S. announced the lineup for its autumn event in St. Louis and the Metro East. As STLPR's Jeremy Goodwin reports, the Counter Public exhibition will be on view at sites throughout the city and engage with issues facing the region.
Counter Public started on Cherokee Street at the Luminary Gallery and various storefronts. Its third installment will include artwork installed along the St. Louis Riverfront, in and around Sumner High School in the Ville, and at the National Building Arts Center in Sauget. Counter Public's executive and artistic director James McAnally says this year's theme, Coyote Time, refers to the moment of uncertainty in a Looney Tunes cartoon, when Wile E. Coyote runs off a cliff but doesn't know it yet.
Which really, I think, speaks to where we are as a region and where we are as a nation at this moment, kind of taking a leap into a future that feels uncertain and is changing so rapidly day by day.
Counter Public 2026 will open September 12th and run for 3 months. I'm Jeremy Goodwin, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listener support is St. Louis Public Radio's largest source of revenue and makes podcasts like The Gateway possible. Show your support for regional news by making a gift at stlpr.org, and thanks.
Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker is calling on Congress to allow for higher blends of ethanol in gasoline year-round as a way to reduce what people are paying at the pump. Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Jerry Costello tells reporter Eric Stock that the push for more E15 gasoline would also provide a lift for corn farmers in the state.
There's two aspects to the situation. Number one, year-round E15. Number one, E15 is about 10 to 40 cents cheaper than regular gas per gallon. Secondly, you've got what's called a winter and a summer blend aspect to E15. Typically speaking, right now is the changeover, roughly March, beginning of April, changeover for the refineries going from a winter to a summer blend. Keeping that winter blend year round is, Gas Buddy would tell you, it's about a 15 cents a gallon difference in the cost of keeping the year-round winter blend.
And what would this do to corn prices by making E15 year-round?
So it would add demand for another $1.5 billion bushels of corn, approximately 4.5 billion gallons of gasoline. So that would be an increased demand for 1.5 billion bushels of corn and increased demand of 4.5 billion gallons of ethanol.
And the federal government has resisted this because of concerns about smog when the weather gets warmer with this E15 fuel. Is that not a valid concern?
I would say the federal government has resisted this because of the petroleum industry, to be very blunt with you. If you look at E15 and you go from the planting process all the way to the end user, E15 is more environmentally friendly. As a matter of fact, in the state of Illinois, during, while corn is growing, the photosynthesis process, believe it or not, we have more carbon capture going on in the state of Illinois than the entire Amazon rainforest while we're growing crops.
How receptive has Congress been to this since the governor has been making this pitch to Congress for many months now?
So what's interesting is obviously, right now we have a Republican president. Both bodies in Congress are controlled by the Republican Party, the Senate and the House. So they've been verbally receptive, but action has not been taken. And just recently, the Trump administration has said that they would do a waiver through the EPA. They can only do a 20-day waiver. So the waiver that they're talking about would be from May 1st until May 20th, which is literally just a blip on the calendar as far as 20 days when you're talking about something that should go the entire year.
If they are receptive, what's been the holdup?
As we talked about earlier, I think the petroleum community, petroleum manufacturers, refiners, they've been the holdup. And so I can tell you, Congress is saying the right things, but there has not been action. And what Governor Pritzker is calling for, what we are calling for, is action to take place to provide long-term market certainty to farmers and relief at the gas pump for consumers.
That was Illinois Department of Agriculture Director Jerry Costello speaking with reporter Eric Stock. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, thanks for listening to The Gateway.